Okay, so we are holding on Dalid on the bays, about eight lines from the top. Okay, so we've been discussing the matter of the issur of chaylev, and in particular, we've been talking about how many different chatois there might be involved in. Are there different chatois for different types of chaylev and different animals? We said no, even Rabbi Shmuel, who says that there are different malchus for them, would agree that there aren't different chatois for them. We said, would there maybe be different chatas? We said, could there be different chatas for different, if they're prepared in different ways? Rabbi Yeshua would say yes, the Chachamim disagree, which we'll learn more about on Daf Tesvat. Okay, so gufa. Getting back to, we said before, we said, ocho chelev nevela, the person eats chelev of a nevela animal, loika shtein, and you get two malchus, one for eating chelev and one for eating nevela. Similarly, chelev mukdoshin like a shtayim. Similarly, if a person eats chelev of an animal of kodshim, he also gets two malchus, one for chelev and one for the fact that he's a zor, which relative to chelev, everybody is a zor because nobody's supposed to eat it. Plus, also in the case of mukdoshin, he's also going to be bringing an osham me'ilus, but we're not dealing with that right now. Because he did me'ilah, he committed me'ilah, he used something of hefesh that he wasn't supposed to. The truth is, and Hashem Me'ilus is only if it was the Shoigig, and here we're talking about the Mezid, so because we're talking about him getting Malchus. Anyway, okay. So anyway, so Rabbi Yehuda oim a chelev mukdashim like a sholosh. But Rabbi Yehuda says if he eats chelev of kodshim, then he actually gets three Malchus. Now, why three? Omelet of Shizbi l'Rava, b'shleim l'Rav Yehuda. Actually, we can understand better, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that he gets three Malchus. One for the fact that he's a zor, and two for the fact that it's chelev. Why? Hainu d'chtivi kroi, because you have like this. You have two different psukim that talk about the issue of chelev. One, you have a pasuk in Parashas Vayikra that says chukas olam. That is, says chukas olam d'risechem b'chol meshreisechem kol chelev b'chol dom loisechem. So that's one lab. Then also it says kol chelev shor v'ketzev v'ez loisechem. Then you have a pasuk in Parashas Tzav, which we were dealing with yesterday, that it says any chelev of an ox or a sheep or a goat you can't eat. And okay, so you actually have the shita of the Rambam, which is that just because the lav is repeated in different places doesn't mean necessarily that there's extra mouth. It's fine, but he were talking about coins of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't have to agree with that concept. He could disagree with that, but and even the Chachamim maybe in some cases would say you have different Gemaras that seem to imply. Famously, the Rambam mentioned a Gemara which we've learned in Kolin, we've learned in different places that if a person eats various kinds of insects, he could be higher 4, 5, or 6 malchus. And almost all the Rishonim understand that the reason he would get extra malchus is because there's multiple times where the Torah says not to eat insects. You have in this week's Parashah, and you have in Parashah Shemini, and you have... No, we're talking about even though that's one insect, nevertheless, a patisa 4, an ant 5, etc. So almost all the Rishonim understand that because the Torah repeats the law, because the Torah says multiple times, don't eat it, therefore there's multiple malchus. The Rambam is about the only one who holds that not. He holds that no. Why would we say that a person gets 4 malchus for eating a potisa or 5 for eating or an ant, etc.? Because a potisa is some kind of insect. But the reason is that Rambam understands because that type of insect falls into multiple categories. It swims on the ground and it swims in the water and it whatever. And therefore, so you have different categories for which a person gets malchus. But according to everybody else, the fact that the Torah repeats it is enough for more malchus. But here we're talking according to Rabbi Yehuda. Fine, the halacha is not like Rabbi Yehuda anyway, then Amram does not have to worry about that. Anyway, fine, so you have the halacha is also common. So anyway, so according to Rabbi Yehuda, it says twice that you can't eat chelev, and then you have the chol zor lo yoichal kodesh. You have a third pasuk that says v'chol zor lo yoichal, that a zor is not allowed to eat kodesh. Or on the side over here, it says that actually it's really Tosfos mentions in Zvachim that really it's supposed to be a pasuk lo v'zor lo yoichal ki kodesh heim from Parshas Tetzaveh, because v'chol zor lo yoichal kodesh is actually talking about Terumah. Anyway, the point is, according to Rabbi Yehuda, we can easily see why he gets three malchus. Hot loss of lavin. He has three lavin. Elo l'rabbanon, my timer. But why would the Chachamim hold that he's not getting two malchus for the chelev? Why would they say, if we have two lavim, chukas olam, kol chelev chodom leisechelu, and kol chelev shor v'kesev v'ez leisechelu, why would they say he's not getting malchus for both? The answer is, kasabri lav de chukas olam, b'kodshim v'lav de chelev shor v'cholim. Because they would say those lavim are addressed in two different cases. One of them is talking about where a person ate chelev of kodshim, and the other one, the lav in Parshas Vayikra, is talking about chelev of kodshim, and the lav in Tzav, in Parshas Tzav, is talking about chelev from cholim. in which case, why would we need the Torah to tell us separately by each of them? Or strictly, we would need the Torah to tell us separately that each type of chaylev is aser. The e kasev rachmana b'kodshim, because if the Torah only told us that chaylev of kodshim is aser, hava amina, then we would think like this. You know why? Kodshim hu dechamiri. Because the reason is kodshim have a chumra. There are a lot of chumras that apply to kodshim that don't apply to chulin. Therefore, the osu chelbo. Therefore, you would say it's chelav is osu. Have a chulin aim aloy, but maybe not chulin. Chulin, you know, you have a lot of rules that apply to kodshim that don't apply to chulin. One second. So therefore, the Torah has to tell us the pasuk kochelav shur about the chulin, and you're asking the pasuk kochelav shur, why can't we learn a kavah chomer? No, hava amina, because we think like this, just the opposite. Chelav de chulin hu de osu mishum de loy chutar miklolay. Why is chelav of chulin osu? Because there's no heter to the general rule. But when it comes to chelav of kodshim, where you have an exception to the rule. One second. Let's finish the line over here. So you would think that once something of them is mutter mikloloi, as we're going to explain in a second what that means, then maybe also the chelav is mutter. And therefore the Chacham say you need both. Now, what do we mean chelav of kodshim is hutar mikloloi? You have a few different explanations. Rashi says that we learned on Amud Aleph, and we've learned before, that the alya, the fat tail, the sheep, is called tor the chelav. It's offered on the mizbeach, but it's not also to eat. When it's offered on the mizbeach, you're not allowed to eat it, but with a chulin animal, you're allowed to eat it. So you would think, therefore, that you have an exception. The alya of chulin, you're allowed to eat. We said yesterday, because we have a pasuk that says that only the type of chelav that you find equally in shur and kesed and aiv is osur, so not the alya. On the other hand, when it occurs, because an alya, you only have that fat tail and sheep. Yeah. So breed the sheep at that. So the point is, therefore, so you would think that with kodshim, the fat and the alya are all also. But by chulin, you see the alya is mutter, so maybe the rest of the chelav is mutter also. That's Rashi's explanation. A couple of other explanations. Shitim Kobesis brings an explanation from the Rosh, which is that ordinarily we have a rule, which we've learned about several times, Mimashke Yisrael, that things can be offered on a Mizbeach only if they're mutter for Jewish people to eat. But here we see that chelav is an exception to that, because chelav is also to eat, and yet you bring it on a Mizbeach. So you would think maybe therefore that when it comes, maybe it's only also when you're offering on the mizbeach. Maybe with chulin you're not offering on the mizbeach. Maybe therefore it should be mutter. So that's another explanation. And then Rabbeinu Gershon brings another explanation also, which is that the meat of the korbanos is also before you sprinkle the blood and burn the fat, as opposed to meat of chulin is not also before anything in principle. As soon as you shech the animal, you could eat the meat, provided you do something about the blood, fine. But the point is, you don't have an isur and then a heter, whereas by kodshim you do. So therefore, you would think that maybe by chulin things are more lenient, and therefore you need both. You would think that only kodshim is chelav also.
And
if you had only chulin, you would think maybe only by chulin is an osir. Because on the other hand, chulin have so many chumras relative to chulin. You can't eat them when they're tame, and you can only eat them in certain places, and only certain people can eat them. And
why would you think if you had chulin, the kodshim would be mutar?
We just said because you would think that if you had it only by chulin, we would say that chulin loy huter miklolay. Again, I have a chelav huter miklolay. Again, by kodshim, we have an exception to the usual rule. We have an exception about alya. We have an exception about the chelav itself is offered on the mizbeach, even though usually it's also to eat. We have an exception that the meat is first also, then becomes mutter. So you would think by kodshim, by chulin only, you don't have any of these exceptions. Therefore, you would say by chulin it remains osur, but by kodshim it would be mutter. Yes, you're supposed to burn on the mizbeach, but if you didn't burn on the mizbeach and you ate it, then you wouldn't be chayav kares or malchus or what have you.
Because
by chulin you don't have these exceptions, and by kodshim you do. So that's the chacham. Here's Rabbi Yehuda. Where's Rabbi Yehuda? We'll hold like this. No. Ki ksiv chelav shur. Fine. Of course we have two psukim. But when the second pasuk that you chachamim are saying, we're talking about chulin, no, that pasuk ben yona de kodshim ksiv. That pasuk is in the context of kodshim. So therefore it has to be talking about kodshim. As we said yesterday, according to Rabbi Shmuel. So the question is, as we said yesterday, So what, are the Chachamim not agree with that rule? Of course, Davar Alamin Minyani. You learn the scope of a mitzvah from the context that it's in. So in this case, if it says Kol Chelav Sher V'Ketzev V'Eiv Lo'Sei Chelu, and we're not sure if it's Kodshim or Kulin, obviously it should have to be Kodshim because of the context. Why would the Chachamim
say?
Because you would have to say because of the context. Because that's the context that it's spoken before and after it are about Kodshim. Minyani means you learn from the context. And the Rabbanan aren't going to disagree with that. So no, the Kula Alma Yachin and Davar Alamin Minyanei. No, of course, both the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda will learn something from the context. The Machlokas is rather as follows. Rabbi Yehuda Sava Lamedin Lav Mi Lav, the Lav Mi Kores. As we said yesterday, that you have Lavim over here. You also have a Kores that it says by one of them in connection with, that says in connection with Chelev and Parshat Tzav. It's a Kikol Oichol Chelev and Nichosa. So Rabbi Yehuda is going to say that you can learn the lav from the lav, and you can learn the lav from the kares. In other words, it doesn't matter whether one lav involves kares, whether one lav has kares written in connection with it, and the other one does not. You can learn one from the other. Therefore, they both are referring to cholin, and therefore they're both referring to kodshim and to cholin.
You can learn a lav.
You can learn a lav that's just a lav from a lav that involves kares. The Rabbanan will hold, you can learn one lav from another, where, for example, you have both of them are only lavim that are chayav malchus. For example, Rashi brings an example from Cholin that we can learn certain dinim about Avim and Achai. We can learn Avim and Achai but not when you have over here where one of them involves Kares, Lav Mi Kares, La Yalpinin. So you can't learn one Lav from another one that involves Kares. So therefore, unless they both have Kares, so therefore, so the Chachamim are going to say that one Kosek is talking about Kodshim and the other one is talking about Cholim. Not necessarily the Chum would say you don't have Kares by both of them, but at least that you can't learn that they should. At least you can't learn that there should be two different lavim involving Kodshim and involving Kolin, such that you should get two separate malchus. You would say one of them applies to Kodshim, one of them applies to Kolin. Fine, there's Kares by both of them, but you're not going to say that you get two separate malchus from that for them.
So that's why
Rabbi Yehuda will say that he gets two malchus for eating chaylev, and the Chum say he gets only one. And that's why. In other words, if he eats chaylev or kodshim, Rabbi Yehuda is saying he gets three malchus. One because he's a zor and he ate kodshim. One because you have a posuk that says you're not allowed to eat chaylev or kodshim. And one because you're not allowed to eat chaylev in general.
And
the Chachamim will say he only gets two because they say that one of those lavim is referring to chaylev of kodshim and the other one is referring to chaylev of cholin. And here he ate chaylev of kodshim. So one for chaylev of kodshim and one for a zor eating kodshim. Okay. Elul Rabbi Yehuda kol chaylev kol dam leisei chaylev lamayasa. Okay, then according to Rabbi Yehuda, what are we learning from the pasuk kol chaylev kol dam leisei chaylev? If according to him you only have, if according to him, what is he doing with that pasuk? He said you get a second malchus for it, fine, but why in particular, why does it mention chaylev and dom together? So, in fact, Rashi takes out this whole piece over here. Rashi again says that it's a girsa mushugeshes over here, but okay, we have it in front of us in the Gemara, so we'll learn it. So miboyle lahakish. The answer is, Rabbi Yehuda will say that we need it for a hekish. The Tanya. The pasuk says you're not allowed to eat any chaylev or any blood. Ma chaylev loikashtayim. So just like chaylev, a person gets two malchus for eating it, as Rabbi Yehuda says. Ach dam loikashtayim. The same thing, chaylev of kodshim. Well, no, he's getting a second malchus for the fact that, because Rabbi Yehuda says he gets two malchus for chaylev alone. Because it's two psukim. So Afdam Lokashtayim, the same way. If he eats blood, he's also getting two malchus. Dibur Rabbi Yehuda.
He doesn't get a malchus for being
zar. That's a separate matter, but we're dealing with the chaylev aspect, right? Dibur Rabbi Yehuda. V'chamam ein ba'el azhora. So Chum say there's only one azhora, there's only one warning when it comes to dam, and therefore there's only one malchus.
I mean, they go out of warning.
Yeah. We're going to have to figure out one. So the question is, why, when it comes to chaylev, are we saying that he gets two malchus, even without a hekish? We did, because we had two psukim. The kasa betre kroy kochelav v'chodam loisechelu kochelav shor v'kesev. And Rabbi Huda is therefore saying two malkus. Well, dam nami b'lav akeshen no pishtayim. Then in that case, I don't need a hekesh to teach us that you get two malkus for eating blood. You anyway have two psukim that say the betre lamin. And again, you have also in Parashas Sam, you have a chodom loisechelu v'chol mishvei sechem loif l'abehema. So you have two separate psukim. So according to Rabbi Huda, two separate psukim automatically means two separate malkus. So according to him, why do you need a hekesh to teach us?
So I understand
that. Okay. Why is it when it comes to chaylev, you're saying that he's getting two malchus, even with, you don't need a hekesh to teach us that he gets two malchus for chaylev, just the fact, the fact that you have two psukim. Number one, ko chaylev chaldom leisei chaylev. Number two, ko chaylev shor v'kesev. And from that, Rabbi Huda says two malchus. Well then, dam nami b'lav akesha nil pishayim. So dam also, even without a hekesh, he ought to be getting two malchus. Because again, you have two laven when it comes to dam. Number one, kochelu b'chol dam lo sechelu, and number two, a pasuk b'chol dam lo sechelu b'chol mishvei sechem lo oif l'abehema. Okay. Ela, so we don't need a hekesh. So no. Ela ema, no, rather, we have to correct the wording, and it's like this. Ma chelu loika sholish af dam loika gimel. Just like Rabbi Huda says that a person can get three malchus for eating chelev, namely we said if he eats two psukim plus zar, af dam loika gimel. So the same thing, blood he'll also get three. So the question is, in that still, why do we need that? Okay, so what's different about chelev? We're saying, why does he get three malchus? It says in it, these two lavim, the two lavim that it mentions chelev, plus the lava that he deserves. Holein tre lava means these two lava. The lava disorder, and the lava from being a zor. Ha tlosa, so that makes three. Well then, dam nami. Shouldn't the same thing be true of blood? You also have two lava on blood, plus the fact two psukim from blood, two psukim that give us a lava, plus these a zor. So yeah, you should automatically be getting three. Why do you need a hekesh? The answer is it's true. We need the hekesh because sakadai the chamina. You would think like this, given that there's an exception that blood of kodshim, there's a mute that tuma doesn't apply to it, the regular tuma, well, in other words, exactly that in other words, actually Rashi and Shittimukubetta say that instead of tuma it should say meila, but whatever, either way, blood of kodshim is not makabel tuma. There's a whole sugi about it in the first paragraph of Psachim about mashke base mitbachaya. Yeah, so yeah. Midrabanan it is, but under Isa level. Yeah. And according to Rashi, rather it should say that there's no me'ila in it. Midar Isa, there's no me'ila in blood of kodshim once it was sprinkled on the mizbeach. So once it was fine, okay, but once it was excluded from Tumah or from Mi'ilah, Lismayit Mizorus, maybe it should also be excluded that he shouldn't be chayav for eating it as a zor. Kamash Malon Hakesha, and that's what the Hekesh comes to tell us, that nevertheless he's getting that food, Malchus.
That's after the sprinkling.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Fine. The Ewa L'Rabbanon Hakesh L'Mayah.
So there's another three things.
And that's what he's learning from the Hekesh. Without the Hekesh, we would think by blood you only get two Malchus. The Hekesh tells us he gets three. Okay, the Elul Rabbanan, Hakesh Lamayasa, knew according to the Rabbanan that you're only getting one Malkus for Chelev and only one for Dan. So what are they doing? One extra one for Zoru is fine. So what are they doing with the Hekesh? The answer is Mibayla the Chidatanya. They use it for the following teaching. We learn in a Braisa, Kochelev Bechodom Leitechelu means Ma Chelev Miyuchad, Shechel Bechodom Mibisore. What is special about Chelev? That it has a distinct din from the meat. Namely, when the pasuk says "shur chelav shur v'kesev ve'ez lo sechelu," means you're not allowed to eat their chelav, but you are allowed to eat their meat. Therefore, the ein mitzayfin zemzeh, and they don't combine together for the iser. Meaning, in other words, now we have a general concept called ein heter mitzayfin iser. By a nazir, we say heter mitzayfin iser, but that's unique. Everywhere else in the Torah, we say ein heter mitzayfin iser. It means, in other words, if a person were to eat a half kezayis of chelev and a half kezayis of meat, he would not be getting malchus, so he would not be bringing a korban or whatever. The half kezayis of heter does not combine together with the half kezayis of iser to make up one complete kezayis of iser. By a nazir, it does. By a nazir, if a nazir dips bread in wine, for example, then the bread also counts towards the kezayis or the revius or whatever to make him chayev for being over on his... Yeah, there's causes, but everywhere else not. So therefore, so in other words, the point is, af dam shadama cholak mitzvah, right? The same thing. When you have the issue of blood, now on the face of it, the difference is chaylev only applies, the issue of chaylev only applies to kosher species, cows, sheep, and goats, as opposed to the issue of the issue of chaylev doesn't apply to chayim. That's what we're talking about. On the other hand, the issue of blood applies equally to behemoth tmeis and behemoth tahoris. So maybe you would think that blood and the meat should combine together. If a person were to eat a half kezias of meat from behemoth tmeis and a half kezias of blood from that behemoth tmeis, maybe it should be chayev. No. Af dam should domei cholok mibstore. The hekesh between dam and chaylev teaches us that nevertheless, it doesn't combine together. It doesn't combine together, not as far as Isser, and not even really actually, said, even as far as Tumah also.
You would think that they would combine,
but therefore not. Yeah.
Because what?
Because you would think they would combine, because they're both Osir. They're both Osir.
Combining doesn't mean because...
No, but you would think. A Heter can't combine with an Isser, but maybe one Isser should combine with another Isser. So therefore, so we're saying that not. They don't combine together as far as Isser, and they don't combine together as far as Tumah. Therefore, that means oitzi dam shrotim. It means, therefore, this hekesh therefore tells us that that rule does not apply to blood of shrotim. Hoyol de'en daman cholok mibsaron, because there the blood of a sheret and the flesh of a sheret, there's no distinction between them in halacha.
Is there blood of a sheret?
Of course, shrotim include they include
blood with red cells.
Yeah, the different shrotim. You think shrotim are insects? We've learned before, shrotim are not insects. Shrotim are various kinds of smallish creatures. Some of them are mammals, some of them are amphibians, some of them are reptiles, whatever. But the point is, they have blood, and they have blood. But the point is that if a person eats blood of a sheret, he's not over on the issue of blood, he's over on the issue of eating from a sheret. So we're going to learn about that later on in the Masechta. So therefore, the blood and the flesh combine together.
Why he's not over on the issue of blood?
We're going to learn that later on. That's the follow. We're going to learn from a limud over there that the issue of blood, the specific issue of blood, only applies to blood of behemoth and chayas and opus, but not of shrub. Not a shrub.
A squirrel is a sheriff?
No, not necessarily. You have eight shrotim that are listed in the Torah, but then, as we're going to talk about in a second now, you have shrotim that are tame, those eight, and you have all the other shrotim, all the other creepy, crawly creatures, which are tahor, for example, snakes. A snake is, they're not metame. A person touches a dead snake, nothing happens. Okay.
But a rat or mice.
And so you have cholod, which there's different explanations, but a cholod means a rat or a weasel or a ferret, creature like that, whatever. Yeah. Or maybe a squirrel would be included under cholod, I don't know. Okay, fine. So that's what we learn from this, that in order for a person to be chayev on dam, it has to be domei cholok mebesore, therefore not sheret. On the other hand, when it comes to and also though that it, well, so it has to be that it has to be that ein mitzarfin zeim zeh. That when it comes to non-kosher animals, also the blood and the meat don't combine together to make a shear for an isser or a shear for tumah. And the same, but on the other hand, shrotim not, the blood is considered part of the flesh and therefore they're mitzvahs. So the question is, you're telling me that we learn that from this pasuk, from the hekesh of dam and chaylev? Mehosim now, because we have a different source for that name. Namely, the pasuk says, v'zelachem atame, the following for you is tame. Limid al dam. It's in Parshas Shmini as an introduction to the shrotim. Limid al dam asheretz asheretz shmitzakin zemdeh. From there we learn that the blood of a sheretz and the flesh of a sheretz combine one with the other. So what do we need the hekesh? Because bezelachem atame means this for you shall be tame. So this means also the blood. Yeah. So we have that. We don't need the hekesh. The answer is ilav hekesha sapidat hamina. Fine, but if it weren't for the hekesh, we would think only having hani milu l'tuma. That's only when it comes to the shear of tuma. When you need a shear the size of a lentil of a sheretz of matame, so then you would say the blood and the flesh combined together. Avalachila, but when it comes to the issur of eating it. No, what are you talking about? There's two different dinners. That a person becomes tame if he touches it, and that a person is high of something if he eats it. So Rashi actually over here says a kezias, although there are other places where Rashi says kadosha. Whatever, the point is there's a shear for eating it. You would think that maybe the blood doesn't combine with the flesh, amaloi, ashmin, and akesha, lachila, therefore we're told the hekesh to apply to the eating.
If you didn't have the hekesh,
you would think that when it comes to tumor, if you have a half a lentil size of flesh and a half lentil size of blood from a sheretz, then they'll combine together. A person touches it, he becomes tummy. But if you were to eat a half kezias of one and a half kezias of the other, he would not be high of malchus, or he would not be high of malchus. And therefore, the hekesh with the hekesh between chaylev and dam tells us that he is.
You couldn't make a kavachomer.
What kind of kavachomer? You can't make a kavachomer.
If they combine for blood and meat.
No, if they combine together for tumor, they should combine for eating. No. Okay. Omer Ravina, so Ravina says in this connection, Hilkach, therefore, we can derive from this, dam nachashuv sarei mitzarfin. The blood of a snake and the flesh of the snake would combine together. The question is, Maikamash Malan. Okay, what's the chiddush? Hainu Akesha. That's exactly what we learned from the hekesh. Okay, the answer is Safadayda Khamina Sherati Srabi Latuma is Srabi Lakila. Fine, you would say it like this. Only the kind of shrotim where you have the din of tuma on them, then we would say the hekesh also adds that you have the same issue if a person eats them, that the blood and the flesh combine together. Nachash doy Srabi Latuma, but a nachash which does not have tuma, a dead snake is not matame. Lo yitzrabi la'achila, you would think maybe it hasn't been included as far as achila. Maybe a person has to eat a whole kezias or kadosh or whatever of the snake's flesh in order to be chayev. Kamash malon, that is what Ravina, kamash malon hekesha, that's what Ravina wants to tell us, that the hekesh is implying.
No, it doesn't have
the tumor. Right. Kol mili de'en cholok mashma, the hekesh is teaching us any time when the blood and the flesh do not have separate dinim, which is true whether the sheretz is tome or whether it's tahar, then the same rule applies.
Which means,
therefore, it applies equally well to a nachash as it does to the cholot and the achla and the tzav. Right. Okay. Omar Rav, Sholish Krisis Hamuris Bedam Lamai. Why does it say three times in the Torah of Kores in connection with eating blood? But like this, achas l'dam cholin, one teaches as a person gets kares for eating blood of cholin, the achas l'dam kodshim, a second one for blood of kodshim. So we said before, Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim are arguing whether a person gets two malchus or one malchus, but they both agree it's also and that there's kares, and also, therefore, kares automatically implies that if it was b'shogeg, he's doing the chafas. The achas l'dama tamsis, and the third one teaches us that not only the dam ha-nefesh, we're going to talk about later on in the Masechta, that you have the dam ha-nefesh, you have the first gush of blood that comes out of an animal when you shecht it, for example. That's the dam ha-nefesh, that's the blood that contains the animal's life force in it.
It's not the
life. No. And then you have dam ha-tamsis, it starts trickling out, you don't even hold it, like you have a little bit, starts, and then you have a huge gush. The huge gush is the dam ha-nefesh. So that
and then
the damage. The achas the dama, so the third kares teaches us a person is also chayv kares even if he eats the dama tamsis, which is the blood that comes trickling out afterwards, after the animal is dead. Okay, so the question is hanichal Rabbi Yehuda. That works only according to Rabbi Yehuda. The Tanya, as we learn in a brisa, that which we're going to talk about later on in the Masechta, dama tamsis v'azhara, Rabbi Yehuda, I remember Kores. The Chum say that dama tamsis is only also in a lab, so a person's going to get maximum malchus for it. Rabbi Yehuda says he's high of Kores for eating it. So according to Rabbi Yehuda, the third Kores teaches us about dama tamsis. El Rabbanan, Ahila Mayasa, but according to the Rabbanan, what are they using the third Kores for? And even according to Rabbi Yehuda, we shouldn't really need a third pasuk, a third time that it says kares to teach us that a person gets kares for damatamtis. Kares nafgalei means kol dum. He learns the kares of damatamtis from the fact that it doesn't just say dum loisoifu, it says kol dum loisoifu, which is an extra thing. The Tanya, as we learn in a
brayta, because it's kol dum,
that means automatically damatamtis as well, according to Rabbi Yehuda. So he doesn't need a third time that it says kares. So the Tanya, as we learn in a brayta, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a dam minayin. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a dam matam adloim a cold dam. The pasuk says that a person is not allowed to eat blood. Why does it say all blood? So like this, in the other dam kodshim shan nefesh yotzebay shul machaper. You would think maybe a person is only osur and chayek kares for eating blood of kodshim, where the life of the animal goes out with it. Shul machaper, which after all that blood is also used for kapara, and in a couple of places where the Torah says not to eat blood, in particular in Parshas Achrimos, it mentions because the blood is meant for kapara. You would think maybe it only applies when it's blood that's meant for kapara. Dam cholin v'dam atamtis minayin. How do we know it also applies to cholin? How do we know it also applies to dam atamtis? Kam tamad lama, cold dam. So he already knows from there that's chayav karis. Why does he need a third time? And according to the Rabbanon, why do we need it at all? Because according to them, the dam atamtis isn't even chayav karis. Now, ela ema, no. We have to say rather like this. Why do we have three times? Echel v'dam cholin, v'echel v'dam kodshim, v'echel v'dam kisui. The third one teaches us about blood of kisui, that a person is still chayav karis for eating. What is blood of kisui? Rashi explains it means blood that was shechted a wild animal or a bird, and as we learned in Cholin, you have to cover it, you have kisui adam. Then let's say it got uncovered, so now you would think, okay, it shouldn't be osur, it's already bottled to the ground, so if a person ate it, you can't make a chayav karis or malchus or a korban or whatever for it, and therefore the third karis tells us that nevertheless he is. Another explanation of dam kisui is another explanation, as Rabbeinu Gershom says, is that actually dam kisui means blood that's supposed to be covered, namely the blood of a chaya or a bird. If we only had so far from the other psukim, we would only know blood of an animal.
What does it say in kisui the tirush?
Kisui adam, it mentions in Parshas Achron, as it mentions that a person checks chaya or show your ochel, then he has to spill out the blood and cover it. But the point is, we're saying, so the one time when it says kares is meant to address dam kisui. Even that, a person is chayav karis.
So you would know from the first wording of kisui that it's forbidden.
No, from one thing of karis, we know that blood of kodshim is chayav karis if a person eats it.
Right.
For the second one for blood of cholin, same thing. And the third one for blood of kisui, either blood that was already covered or blood that has to be covered, as the case may be, that nevertheless. But Amar Rava, also Rava says in this connection, chamisha lavin ha'amurim b'dam lam. Now, fine, we said it says three times kores by blood. Now let's talk about why it says five times in the Torah allowed not to eat blood. Some of them actually in this week's parasha. Now actually, Rashi points out that altogether there are none. However, nine times in the Torah it says don't eat blood. Three or four of them alone are in this week's parasha. However, Rashi points out we're not addressing some of them because some of them we already know from other Gemaras that they're used for other drushes. So, for example, one of them is for Avim and Achai. One of them teaches us a din about Basa B'cholov. One of them teaches us a din about Chaylev. So, four of them. And then Rashi says another one teaches us Lahazir Gerlam Al-Kanim, that adults are responsible to not allow kids to eat blood, even though kids themselves are not Chayev yet. But so you have five left over. So what are you doing with those five? So like this, achas l'dam cholin, one teaches us that you're not allowed to eat blood of cholin, but achas l'dam kodshim, another one for blood of kodshim, but achas l'dam kisui, a third one for blood of kisui, as we just said, but achas l'dam evorim, the fourth one teaches us that you're also not allowed to eat blood of evorim. Now that can either mean, Rabbeinu Gershom explains that it means after you shecht an animal, you cut the limbs apart, and blood comes out. That would be dam evorim. But I'm understanding Dame Evarim a little differently. He says it means, like, for example, the blood that's in the heart or in other cavities in the body where you have pools or collections of blood. Anyway, that's Dame Evarim. But Achas, the Dame Atamtis, and the fifth one teaches us about Dame Atamtis, the blood that trickles out. So all five of them are also to eat. Not all of them are Chayav Kores, but all of them are also to eat, and there's all an Issur Lav, and there's all Malchus involved. Okay. So now that takes care of the matter of blood. Now we're going to get back to, before we got into this whole discussion by talking about, we started talking about chelev, and then that got us into blood also. And we had started the sugya yesterday by saying that Rabbi Shmuel had said that because the Torah says, kol chelev shor v'kesev v'ez moshe chelu, and Rabbi Shmuel had understood that the Torah didn't need to mention all three of them, that therefore we can say that it's meant l'chalev, it's meant to teach us separate malchus for each one. Now we're going to have some similar things. Amar Avila, Ochol Maiser Dogam Tirish V'Yitzhar Loika Sholosh. Now, the Torah tells us in this week's Parsha, Parsha Surah 8, Loi Sucha Lecha B'Sharecha, you're not allowed to, literally, Loi Sucha means you can't, but Rashi explains it means you're not allowed to, Yochol Ata Avlein Harashai, you're not allowed to eat in your cities, and it lists a whole bunch of things that you're not allowed to eat anywhere outside your line. And the first ones on the list are Maiser Dogam Chotirosh V'Yitzharecha. So therefore, Rav Ila says, if a person were to eat meiser of grain and of wine and of oil outside your shalayim, loika shol, meiser sheni, that is, loika sholish, then he's getting three malchus.
That's within the walls of the ocean.
No, outside. If he eats the outside of the shoreline, he eats the inner shoreline.
He's only allowed
to eat it within the walls of the shoreline. So the question is why? But in looking at lab shabbat clawless, why you don't get malchus for a lab shabbat clawless? And this is a lab shabbat clawless because if it was considered three separate labim, the Torah would have had to say don't eat meiser dogon and don't eat meiser tirish and don't eat meiser yitzer. So like this is the lab shabbat clawless. Why three malchus? The answer is shiny hocha to miyatri kroy. The answer is that here it's different because the words in the pasuk are extra. The Torah already writes later on in Parshas Re'eh that you should eat mitzvah haseh, you should eat before Hashem, meaning in Yerushalayim, the ma'aser of your grain, wine, and oil. So we already know from that the snim ein b'chutzloi. We already know from that then that you can only eat and not outside. So therefore, lifnei Hashem means in Yerushalayim. So why, when it comes to the labs, does the Torah have to give the same list again? Obviously, it must be lachalik. It must be in order to divide it and to say that there's separate malchus for each one. Okay, the question is, the Gemara says, why? No, because if you only have the pasuk by the eser, the achalto lifnei Hashem lekecha, havamina, then you would think, hani mili be'eser. Okay, you would say that if a person eats them outside Yerushalayim, then he's over on three lav habamikal eser, which has the force of an eser. Ava b'lav eim aloi. You would argue that maybe when it comes to an actual lav, the type that gets a person malchus, maybe not, aim aloy, maybe it's not considered separate lavim. You would think that when the Torah says, v'achalto lifnei Hashem alekecha masa begon chatirosh chavitzerecha, so fine, if a person eats maisu of dogon and of tirosh and of yitzur outside of Yerushalayim, he was over on three esses. He was over on three esses, three lava bomikal esses. But a lava bomikal esses is effectively an esses. There's no malchus for that. You would think when it comes to the type of lav that gets him malchus, aim aloy, you would think maybe not. And therefore, I'm too lahachi kotzav rachmana lo suchal lo oifma b'lav. And therefore, the Torah had to list them out when it comes to the lav in order to tell us that each one has its own individual lav. So what are you telling me that it's coming lahalik? It's coming because otherwise you wouldn't know that there's a separate lav on each one. V'abdayim lav shabbat flawless, but nevertheless, you could still argue that it is a lav shabbat flawless, because again, in order for it to be the type of separate lav, which gets in separate malchus for each one, it would have to say on the face of it, don't do this, and don't do this, and don't do this. And by saying instead one loy sukhal for the whole list, then it means only one lav, so only one malchus. Where do we get three malchus? The answer is, in Cain, yes, but if that's all the pasuk wanted to tell us, name a krol loy sukhal lo'och lom bisharecha. The Pasuk could have just said, you are not allowed to eat them in your gates and in your cities. Instead it says, so it could have said, you're not allowed to eat them. We would understand that the them means the types of meiser that are mentioned elsewhere in the parasha. And therefore, we would say then it would be a lav shabbat klolos. Because we'd say, the Torah would say, in other words, it wouldn't say literally, it would say, or whatever. The point is, it would use some kind of expression that would make it clear that it means all the different types of meiser that are mentioned elsewhere, but not that we're listing them out individually. So why instead does it spell out, it must mean, it must be to tell us that there's a separate issue of eating on every individual one.
Because you know already about what they are
from someplace else. Right? So that's what it is. And indeed, if a person were to eat mice or dogon, tirish, and yitzar, he would indeed be getting three malchus, as we're saying.
But one chatas?
There's no chatas involved because there's no kares. Chatas is only when there's kares, and there's no kares for eating mice, sheni, outside of your shalim.
What is it?
It's just a lot, then. If he was over b'shogi, he would just have to do trivia. What do you have? The usual rule with lavim is that tshuva tolav yom kippur mechaper, is that he does tshuva and that suspends his punishment, and then yom kippur cleans him up completely. Okay, fine. Amar Rav Yitzchak. So Rav Yitzchak says here's another din in this connection. Ha'oichel lechem koli v'karmel loike gimel. If a person, same thing, you have a similar thing where the Torah says that when it comes to chadash, that you're not allowed to eat from the new grain, from the new crop of grain before the omer is brought, and the Torah says v'lechem v'koli v'charmel lo yisterichu. You're not allowed to eat bread or koli, which is toasted grain, or caramel, which is fresh grain. Yeah, you actually have a few. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you actually have a couple of different details. Yeah, you have a couple of different nuances. What exactly is kali versus caramel? Rashi on the psukim seems to say that kali means that both kali and caramel are toasted, but kali is ground up to make flour and caramel is left intact. The Minchas Chinuch one. Yeah, it's grain. Grain, wheat, right. Barley, any of the chamesh is a minimum. So if a person were to eat lechem and koli and caramel before the oimer is brought, loika gimel, then Rabbi Yitzchak says he's getting three malchus. So the question is, again, in loika and a lav shebekwalus, why you don't get malchus for a lav shebekwalus? And again, here if it said lechem loisoichel and koli loisoichel and caramel loisoichel, sure, he'd get separate malchus for each one, but it doesn't. It just says v'lechem v'koli v'caramel loisoichel. So why does he get three malchus?
A lav shebekwalus,
the rule is, you have actually a machlokas, a baya and rabba in a few places in Shas, Tzachim and in some other places, do you even get any malchus for a lav shebekwalus like that, or do you only get maximum one?
One.
So one way of looking at it is you get maximum one, because the Torah says loy one time. The other way of looking at it, I think Abaya holds that way. Rava holds, I think, that, or maybe I have it backwards, I don't remember, but anyway, that the prototype of the kind of lab that a person gets malchus for is the issue of lois saxem shobedisha. You know, like muzzle an ox while threshing the grain. Now that lab is listed all by itself. You have a lois saxem shobedisha, nothing else included with that. So therefore, so that manda amar rabbi, I think it is, will say that a lab where you have two different things listed is not like that prototype. Therefore, you can't be chayav malchus for it at all.
When there's two things listed,
or three things, whatever. Because the Lois Saxon Shobedisha is not like that. There's only one thing listed.
Why are you not allowed to...
I mean, ultimately the reason is because Hashem said so, but the time amits was on it because it's cruel to the animal that's working on the animal, and it's working on the food, and it sees it and can't even eat it. Whatever, the point is there is such a mitzvah. So anyway, so the question is, you don't get malchus for a lav shebekwalus. Again, that would mean either you get one or zero, according to Abaya or Rabba, but definitely not three. The answer is, again, shiny hocha de miyata kroi. The answer is, here also the psukim, the words lechem, koli and caramel are extra. Le makro lechem, because after all, the posse could have just mentioned you're not allowed to eat bread. V'nelach koli v'caramel. We could have derived by mamatino. If you're not allowed to eat bread, of chodosh, you're not allowed to eat koli and caramel either. However, the Gemara doesn't like that. Ikala mifrach, you could slug that up. Mala lechem sheken yisraba eto chala. Okay, but you could argue bread has a special status because it has a mitzvah of chala. You have to take chala from a dough that you make bread out of. You don't take chala from koli or caramel. So you could argue maybe only lechem a person is chayav malchus for eating, but not, yeah. Okay, so the answer is fine. And what nichtav koli, lechem lechem. Fine, so it could have said koli, and we didn't have to write bread. V'nei lech mikoli. And we could have learned, once you're not allowed to eat koli, then you're not allowed to eat bread either. Okay, the Gemara says no. Lechem mikoli le'osi. No, you can't learn bread from koli, because the difference is, mishum b'koli yiste be'ene, lechem lo yiste be'ene. Because the difference is, koli is at least still in its original state. It's toasted grain, so the grain still exists. Yiste be'ene still exists in its original state.
Be'ene is what?
Be'ene means in its eye, meaning it's a state. It stayed the way it was, yeah. It's still grain. It's toasted grain, but it's still in the same form that it was before.
Whereas
bread is not. It's ground up into flour and made into dough, etc. So you could argue maybe only koli would be also and not bread. Even according to Rashi's explanation on the psukim, that koli is toasted grain that's been ground up. Nevertheless, it's still more be'ene than bread, which has been made into something that looks completely different. So therefore, you can't say it should have said koli. Okay, what about caramel? What about caramel mikoli le'osi? Furthermore, you can't say that you can learn caramel, fresh grain, from koli either. Mishum de koli nisrabe et samanachas, caramel and nisrabe et samanachas. Because when it comes to menachas, you have one case where you use koli, but you never use caramel. Namely, when it comes to the korban ha'omer, you don't take fresh grain. You do. You originally harvest fresh grain, but then you dry it and you toast it and dry it and ground it and grind. Yeah, we learned in menachas. They put it ba'abu shal mechoshes in like a colander-like thing made out of metal in order to roast it. Yeah. So it's a koli is used for menachas. Caramel is never used for menachas. So you can't say that if it said koli, we should learn caramel from it. Yeah. Okay, the question is, fine, nichtev, okay, you're going to ask, nichtev caramel v'nelach lechem b'koli minah, you should say, fine, it could have said only caramel, fresh grain, and we would learn by Mama Finu that koli and that bread and koli you can't eat either. You can't, ikal mitrach, because you could slug that up also. Malach caramel shekem l'nishtanem ibiyosev. Because after all, caramel is not changed from its original state. Koli still looks like the original thing because it still looks like grain, or at least it looks like flour that came from grain. But caramel is even more than that because caramel isn't changed at all. It's completely fresh. It's completely fresh kernels, as opposed to even to koli, which is not fresh anymore. In fact, Minchas Chinuch, I think it is, takes the view that caramel might even mean grains that are still on the stalk. So they're even more in there. They're even more in the original state. Yeah. Okay. So, fine. Min chad lo yalfi. Okay, so you can't learn, you can't say the pasuk should have said any one of them. Again, we're trying to figure out why Rabbi Yitzchak would be telling us that a person gets three malchus. On the face of it, the pasuk had to say lechem koli and caramel because we can't learn one from the other. So let's see if we could work that it could have said only two of them and it didn't have to say the third. We could have learned the third and then we would say we have that third one as extra. Just about malchus. So min chad lo yalfi. So fine, we can't learn we can't learn two of them from one. Neilaf chodem min train. Let's try to do a sada shava and learn one of them from two of the others. So the answer is how do you want to do it?
So if you can learn
you could say that one is extra. Then you could just say that one at least is extra, and it could teach us about malchus. And then we could even say lo lamed al atzma yotza lo lamed al kol klal kol yotza, and we would say all of them are chayav malchus. Okay, but the Gemara says it doesn't work. Loy nichtev krol lechem v'neilach mikoli v'caramel. Would you say that the Torah shouldn't have had to write bread and we could have learned it from koli and caramel by a sada shaveh? No. Ikal mifrach, because you could slug it up. Malach koli v'caramel, the isna and v'einehen. No, because koli and caramel are still more or less in their original state, as opposed to lechem is completely in a different state. Yeah. Loy nichtev krol caramel v'neilach milechem v'koli. Should you say that it didn't have to say caramel and we could have learned it from lechem and koli? Because you could slug that up also. Again, both bread and koli are sometimes used for a korban mincha. Bread, we learned about in menachas, you have various types of baked menachas. Koli, you have by the omer. Caramel was never used for menachas. So it can't be said.
Caramel is what exactly?
Caramel is fresh grain. Or according to the Minchas Chinuch wants to say that maybe what it means is it is toasted, or actually Rashi also
fresh grain.
Exactly. Barley or wheat or any of the chameshes I mean. You have five species that are called grain in halacha. Chitim, which is wheat, sa'orim, barley, kusmin, which is usually translated as spelt, shibolas shual, and shifon, which usually are translated as oats and rye. So those five are considered grain in halacha.
Here
is old caramel. So caramel just means any one of these five that's still fresh grain. Or, okay, you have nuances in it. Maybe it means it is toasted, but it wasn't ground up. Maybe it means it's still on the stalks. Whatever. The point is that, yeah.
There's no major difference.
Yeah. The point is, in other words, that, yeah. But caramel is never used for a kerb. Okay, however, Amalach Rabbi Yitzchak, can answer you. You know why I'm saying there's something extra in the pasuk? Fine. I agree it couldn't have left out lechem. I agree it couldn't have left out caramel. But lo nichtav kro koli v'neilach milach v'caramel. Koli is extra in the pasuk. Toasted grain. It didn't have to say that. We could have learned that by a sada shava from bread and caramel. My parchas, because how would you try to slug it up? E parchas malalechem shekin nisraba etochala. Are you going to argue, yes, but bread has a special status because it has a mitzvah chala? Caramel, yosiach, and I'll tell you, okay, caramel doesn't have a mitzvah chala, and you're also not allowed to eat it as chodesh. The e mishum de caramel and ishtanim ibriyosa. You're going to say, okay, but caramel wasn't changed from its original state. Lechem yosiach, okay, I'll answer you, well, bread was changed, and you still see. So obviously, therefore, as usual with the sada shava, neither one of those factors can explain why both lechem and caramel are also as chodesh. Obviously, it must be just because what do they have in common? Because they have in common because they come from grain. Hilkach loike, therefore we get malchus. Give me yasser, because we have something extra in the pasuk, because koli is extra.
Initially, you could not exclude caramel.
You couldn't leave out caramel, and you couldn't leave out lechem, but you could conceivably leave out koli. If the Torah had told us you're not allowed to eat from the chodesh crop, from the new crop, you're not allowed to eat bread or caramel, we would automatically understand that koli is also included. So therefore, if it says koli in the pasuk, then it means that it's unnecessary, and it means it's teaching us about malchus. Okay, so the question is, okay, so maybe what it means is then, fine, koli is extra in the potter. So a person gets one malchus for eating koli, and then he gets one malchus for eating lechem and tarnal. So where do we get three separate malchus? The answer is, imkein, nichtiv kro, lechem, tarnal, v'koli. Fine, but if that were the case, the posset could have said, first bread, then caramel, and then put koli last, the one which is extra. Inami nichtiv koli v'lechem v'caramel. Or could have put koli first. Amai kosav l'koli be'emsa. So why does it put koli in the middle? Because it's trying to teach us. Hachi kamar. Lechem v'koli nechayev, v'caramel nechayev v'koli. Bread carries the same punishment of malchus as koli does, which we know koli does because it's extra. And caramel is also chayiv in the same thing that koli is as before. In other words, when the pasuk says lechem v'koli v'caramel, what it really means is bread and koli are in the same category, just like koli gets malchus, so is bread, and v'koli v'caramel, caramel is in the same category as koli, and also there's malchus for it. By putting koli in the middle of the list, the Torah is hinting to that one. No. So that's where we get that a person is high of malchus separately for each one of them, and that indeed is the halacha. A person eats chadosh of bread and of koli and of caramel, he's getting three malchus. Okay. Omer Rav Yanai. Okay, so Rav Yanai says, in this connection, Rav Yanai says, lo'olam al tihi gzeira shava kal, not really in this connection so much, but to kind of round out the discussion that we had over here about various kinds of isuri achila. Rav Yanai says, never treat a gzeira shava lightly. Never think, okay, gzeira shava, yeah, you have one word here, one word there, sure. The Chacham are just making it up. Hekesh is in the same part. Gzeira shava is across different circuits. Share pigul echad migufei Torah, because consider, the matter of pigul is, the concept that a person has high of courage for eating pigul is a basic concept in Torah, and the Pasuk teaches it to us by way of a Gzeira Shava. It never actually says in so many words in the Pasuk that if a person eats pigul, he's high of courage. We learn it from a Gzeira Shava. The Amr of Yechanan, namely, Rav Yechanan says, Toni Zavda Bar Levi, like this, what's the Gzeira Shava? We learned it in Zvachim, yeah. Nemer Lahalan V'Oichla V'Avonu Yisa. You have a pasuk in Parashat Kedoshim that says anybody who eats from it is going to bear his guilt. Then in Parashat Tzav, you have another pasuk that says if a person eats from it, they will bear their guilt. And in the first pasuk in Parashat Kedoshim, it spells out kares, malahalam kares, just like over there, which in Parashat Kedoshim it's talking. Rashi explains that the pasuk in Parashas Kedoshim, even it does mention the word pigul, actually. However, we learned in Zvachim that it's not actually referring to pigul, it's actually referring to chutz l'makoyno. It's actually referring to the case where a person had in mind that he's planning to eat the korban outside its place, outside of his mikdash. And he said there's a chiyuv kares over there. But there isn't a chiyuv kares on there. So therefore, what it is like this, we're kind of breaking up the pasuk. We're saying the pasuk mentions van nefesh, the pasuk mentions v'oichol avonu yisa, and it finishes off that he gets kares. We have another pasuk that mentions in connection with pigul, avonu tisa, without saying what that avonu tisa entailed, malahalan kares, afkan kares. Just like in the pasuk in Parashas Kedoshim, it says kares at the end of that same pasuk. The same way, in Parashas Tzav, it also means kares.
What's the
Gzeira Shava? In other words, avonu yisa, avonu tisa. So therefore, we see that the whole concept that a person gets kares for eating pigul, we learn only from a Gzeira Shava. Yeah.
It's not a real pasuk.
Right. But nevertheless, it's still considered gufei Torah. It's still considered a fundamental part of Torah. And by the way, part of what we mean also when we say that it's considered part of gufei Torah, the Rambam explains, so the Rambam famously explains in Sefer HaMitzvos, in the Shorshim, that one of his rules, when do we count something as one of the Tayag Mitzvahs and when not, if we learn something from one of the Yud Gimel Midas, we generally do not consider it one of the Tayag Mitzvahs. However, the Rambam says there are exceptions, such as if the Gemara calls it Gufei Torah. So that's over here in this case. If we learn something from a Kal V'Chomer or a Gzeira Shava or a Binyan Av or whatever, it's not usually considered a separate mitzvah. Mm-hmm. However, if the Gemara calls it Gufei Torah, then it is.
And this is
Gufei Torah, yeah. The whole concept of piggle, that the other person is also to eat piggle, and if he does, he's chayav kares, he's one of the 613 mitzvahs. Amar Rav Simoi, similarly Rav Simoi says, lo'olam ati gzeder shava kala beinecha, never think lightly of a gzeder shava, shari noiser echa migufay Torah, because also the din of noiser is a basic thing in the Torah, v'lo limdei akos of elam gzeder shava, and we learn it only from a gzeder shava, that a person gets kares for it. Maihi, what is Xerah Shava? That we learn noiser from Yalif Kodesh Kodesh, because we learn a Xerah Shava on the word Kodesh. Here it says V'Ochel Vavoni Yisro Kies Kodesh Hashem Chilel V'Uchtiv, and you have a different passage that says V'Sarachtes and Noiser Ba'esh Ki Kodesh. For them, you have to burn noiser in fire because it is holy. So again, the passage in Parashas Kedoshim that mentions Kodesh is not talking about noiser. It's talking about a different din. It's talking about chutzim koyim, right? But from there we learn by Xerah Shava to noiser that noiser is chayav kares.
And that's also
gufay Torah. Yeah.
So it's two in the same pasuk.
So there's two things that we're learning: two Xerah Shavas that we're learning from the same pasuk. One that we're learning from Avon Yetzisa, and the other one that we're learning from Kodesh. Yeah.
But it's
same pasuk.
Yeah.
Same pasuk, but we're taking it. Amar Abaya, lo'olam al tigzeres shava kala beinecha. Similarly, Abaya, and then by the way, the Aruch HaNeir talks about why each of the Amaroyim has to bring a different source, because you have different ones. One we're learning only the punishment, one we're learning the punishment and the Isser, one we're learning the scope of the Isser, etc. Yeah. So Amar Abaya, lo'olam al tigzeres shava kala beinecha. Never treat tigzeres shava lightly. Share bitay me anusosay hein hein gufei tera. Because consider the case we talked about the other day, where the man has a daughter from a woman that he raped or otherwise had relations with outside of marriage. The Torah doesn't spell out in so many words that he's also to have relations with that daughter. The Torah teaches it to us by means of Xerah Shava, that he's Osir and that he's Chayav, and that he's Chayav Seif for it. The Amar Rava, namely Rava says, Amar Rav Yitzchak Bar Avdimi, Asya Heina Heina, yeah, we've had it before, yeah. Asya Heina Heina, we had it also in Sanhedrin, I think, yeah. Asya Heina Heina Li Surah, we have a Xerah Shava on the word Heina to tell us that it's Osir, and Asya Zima Zima La Srefa, and you have a different Xerah Shava, because you have the posit to Shara Heina, Zima Hi, so from the Heina we're learning a Xerah Shava that it's Osir, and from Zima we're learning to a different posit where it mentions Zima and it mentions Srefa, so we learn the Srefa, we learn that a person gets Srefa. So again, that's Gufei Torah. And here also the Rambam explains that like this, you would think that a person's daughter should not be considered as one of the 613 mitzvahs, but no, because the Gemara is saying that the Gufei Torah, then it actually counts as one of the lavim. The Rambam also stresses, by the way, that Rambam mentions in the Shoshim over there, that's he says that's why the Gemara uses the expression. The Gemara doesn't say lo lamdua chacham. Because that would imply it would imply that it was left up to the Chachamim to deduce that Xerah Shava, and therefore it's not Gufei Torah. But the fact that instead the expression is Loilimda Akosav Elam Xerah Shava, the Torah taught it by means of a Xerah Shava, means that it's considered part of Gufei Torah. It's considered as if it said explicitly in a Pasuk. And a fourth one. Omer of Ashi, Alti Xerah Shava Kalabe Necha, Shari Niskolim, Hein Hein Gufei Torah, the concept that a person gets skila is a basic thing in the Torah. And we learn, Reloy Linda Akasav Elam Xerah Shava. How do we, not that a person gets skila, rather. You have like this, there's 18 Averis for which a person can get skila. And by most of them, it does not use anything, by most of them, it doesn't say anything about actually throwing stones at them. So how do we know? The Pasuk says they're chayav misa, but how do we know? Well, limda akosav alam gzeirah shava. The Torah teaches it only by means of a gzeirah shava. The Tanya, we learn in a brisa, nemar kan dmehem bam. Here, by many places where a person is chayav skila, for example, a person with his mother, a person with his daughter-in-law, etc., the Pasuk uses the expression dmehem bam, their blood is on them. Now, on the surface, that could just mean, and some of them are Purshim, on the Pasuk say, I think Rashi also says, on chaff level, it just means, like the Torah is saying, they're responsible for their own death. But it's more than that. We learn Xerah Shava. V'nema b'ovi yudoni d'mehem bam. At the end of Parashas Kedoshim, the last Pasuk of Parashas Kedoshim, says that a person who does over yudoni magic gets skila, and it says d'mehem bam. Ma lahalam b'skila, and by over yudoni it spells out, for ever yugamu oisam, they should pelt them with stones. Afkan b'skila, the same way, by d'mehem bam. By arayas, it also means skila. So that whole concept, Dvehim Bam, so we wouldn't know then that a person has relations with his mother or his daughter-in-law or whatever, or all these various other cases, of Chayav Skila, that they're actually Chayav Skila, were it not for the Torah told us Gzeira Shavah. So therefore we see how important Gzeira Shavah is, and that's Gufei Torah.
There's a third one.
So that's four. We have four. We have Pigul, Noiser, Bito Manusosai, and Skila. Okay. All right, next thing the Mishnah said is Hamasatim et Hashem. The Mishnah had said another case that a person is Chayav Kares B'mezid or Chakas B'shogig is if he compounded the Shemen and Mishnah. So let's talk about that.
He puts all the spices
and everything together. Tanan Abonim, we learn in a Brisa. First of all, Hamasatim et Hashem Lilmoid Boy, if a person compounds the Shemen and Mishnah in order to learn how it's supposed to be made, or he makes it in order to give it over to the Tzibur, Potter, then he's Potter from Kares or from Achata. Now, Shittim HaKubetis brings up an interesting point. What do you mean to give it to the Tzibur? The Gemara is going to mention soon that there was only one thing of Shemen HaMishkah that was ever used. Moshe Rabbeinu made the original recipe of it, according to Hashem's direction, and they used it for generations after that until it was hidden away towards the end of the first edition of this. They never had to make another one. So what do you mean a person's making one to give it to the Tzibur? So the Shittim HaKubetis says, no, because they didn't make another. They never made another one. So the Shittim HaKubetis says maybe what it brings from Tosfos that we don't have in front of us that says that maybe what it means is, okay, the Tzibur doesn't need it, but if he made it in order to give it to the Tzibur, then he'd be Potter. Fine, the Tzibur doesn't actually need it, but that's one answer. Another answer that some of Farshim say is, let's say he made it before Moshe made it. And a third answer, third interesting answer, is based on the wording of the Rambam. It seems that the Rambam may hold that if a person makes it to give it to somebody else, even if that somebody else is not the Tzibur, he would also be Potter. Only if he's making it for his own personal use would he be Chayav. Okay.
But
if a person makes a duplicate of the Shemen HaMishkah in order to smear on their skin, then he's chayev. V'asoch mimenu potter. But if a person actually smears some of that duplicate on his skin, then he's potter. L'fishein chayovin el al sichas Shemen HaMishkah shalasa Moshe bovad. Because the person is only chayev kares or achatas only for smearing the original Shemen HaMishkah that Moshe made.
Not a duplicate.
So if a person makes a duplicate intending to smear it, then he's going to be Chayav Kares. But if he actually takes some of that duplicate and smears it, he's not Chayav Kares for that. Okay, but that's how it is.
Okay.
So we said if a person is making a duplicate of the Shemen HaMishkah in order to learn how to do it or in order to give it to the Tzibur, then he's Potter. Menolan, where do we know that from? The answer is Asi Maskuntai Min Bemaskuntai Diktoras. Here we have another Gzeira Shavah. That the Torah says, both by the Shemen HaMishkah and by the Torah, the Torah says you're not allowed to duplicate the recipe, and it uses the word maskunta or maskunta, meaning the recipe. Shemen HaMishkah and Torah. Both of them it says you're not allowed to make the maskunta, which is according to the recipe. The Torah spells out, you're not allowed to make for yourselves. Implying lachem huda, so you're not allowed to make it for your own personal use. Ava lamoisur tzibur lekort tzibur potter. But if you're making it for the tzibur, then you'd be potter. Okay. What it means is like this. By the ketores, that's what it means. It means like this. By the ketores, if a person makes ketores lamoisur tzibur, then he's potter. Gabe shemen nami lamoisur tzibur potter. And the same thing with the shemen amishka. That's the Gzeira Shavah teaches us that both of them, if he makes them only if he makes them for Lachem, for himself, then he's Chayav, but if he makes it for the Tzibur, he's Potter. Okay. So the question is, V'tihedu K'toras v'neilach mishemen. Why don't we learn then K'toras from Shemen HaMishkah, use the Gzeira Shavah in the other direction to say like this, Ma Shemen kimafatim l'chatzoyin Potter. When it comes to the Shemen HaMishkah, if a person makes half the recipe, he'd be Potter. He'd only be Chayav, he makes the exact full recipe that it says in the Torah, ah, Tertus nami kimafatim lachatoyim potter. You should argue the same thing should be for Tertus. If he makes a fraction of it, then he should be potter. We haven't talked about Tertus yet. But we're saying, we said we have a Gzeira Shavah.
Right.
We said the Gzeira Shavah teaches us that just like Tertus, a person makes it for the Tzibur, he's potter, so also Shemen HaMishkah.
Right.
But the Gzeira Shavah should also teach us in the other direction. A person is only chayav for making complete recipe of Shemen HaMishkah, the complete amount, as it says in the Torah, for personal use. So the same thing, Ketores should also be. Alama Omar Rava. So why do we see that Rava says, later on, and that Rava Amadeh, Ketores Shepit Malachatzoi in Chayev. We actually say it every day in Damon. We say Ketores Malachatzoi in Chayev. That's something else. But yeah, that Rava says over there that if a person were to make the Ketores by a half of the complete recipe, then he'd be Chayev. In other words, he makes it in proportion. He makes it with the same 11 spices and in the proper proportions and whatever, but he makes half as much. Instead of making 368 mana of it, he makes 184 mana.
It
doesn't matter. Rava would say he's still Chayev, yeah. On the other hand, Rava is saying this. Nobody's arguing with Rava. Shemen shepit melachatzoyin potter. On the other hand, the Shemen amishka, if a person makes half of it, he's potter. So what's the difference? If you have a gzera shava, it should apply to that also. The answer is, omalach Rava. Rava will tell you the difference is like this. Gabish shemen ksiv umaskunter leisatu kamoivu. Because by the Shemen amishka, it doesn't just say don't make the recipe. It says don't make the recipe like it. Meaning kamoihu also, only if it's like it, only if it's in the exact amount, the exact rates and everything that it says in the Torah. Avochesti is shakudami. So if he makes a half or any other fraction of it, then it would be fine. Gabi k'toras, the k'tivak, k'toras ha-shetasa. On the other hand, when it comes to the k'toras, the expression in the pasuk is, the k'toras that you make, you should not duplicate it. Well then, making means kolasiya de k'toras. Then it means anything that can be considered making, that can be considered doing with k'toras. Well, extra demakic pras shachas or pras ben habayim. You could make the k'toras in a small quantity at a time. You could conceivably compound only a mana, because you only need a half a mana in the morning and a half a mana in the afternoon. So you could compound it on a daily basis if they needed to in the business. Therefore, if a person does that, then he's chayav in the same way, even though it's not the full 368 mana. As opposed to the Shemana Mishka, where it says Kamoy. Okay. Okay, we'll stop over here and we'll learn about the recipe for the Shemana Mishka tomorrow, that's the Shem.
Shemana Mishka
is the anointing oil, as we're gonna learn in the Gemara. They used it to anoint the Mishkan and all of its Kalim.
Right.
Only the original Kalim, by the way. We learned, I think, in Menachos, that after in future generations, when they make a new Kali and they use it for the first time, that's how it's in Skadish. They also use the Shemana Mishka to anoint the Kohenim in Moshe's times and all future Kohenim version. They also used it to anoint the kings, although only under certain circumstances, as we'll talk about tomorrow.
So they had one Shemana Mishka.
So they had one flask or one container, whatever, of Shemana Mishka from Moshe Rabbeinu's times, and they continued using it until towards the end of the first Beis
Hamikdash.
Mice and Nisim. We're going to talk about that tomorrow. That's the chance.
So there is some remaining?
There's all of it remaining, the Gemara says. The Derech Nes, all of it is still intact.
Underneath the
Beis Hamikdash or whatever it is.
Sure.